Welcome to week 52 of our 4.5 year journey through all of God's inspired word. That means, of course, that we have been 1 year at this project, and we've still got 3.5 years left. So I hope you will continue on the journey with me, and that you'll invite others to join us as well. Now, we're in the book of Judges, chapter number 9, and we were dealing with the story of Abimelech, the son of Gideon. And this son had decided that he ought to be king of Israel, just like his father had been offered and refused. Unfortunately, he is a tyrant. And the people of the city that supported him becoming king have now realized that. The city that we're talking about is Shechem, which is the location of the shrine of the standing stones of the covenant. But that has now become a place of idolatry and twisted worship. And Abimelech is a product of his time, shall we say. And he now becomes the oppressor in the cycle of the judges that we've been seeing. Now, it's been 3 years, and Abimelech is no longer supported by the people of Shechem as a whole. The administration there belongs to him, but the people are not supporters of his any longer. And that's illustrated by this part of the story. Judges chapter 9, verse 26. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, moved into Shechem with his relatives, and the leaders of Shechem put confidence in him. So we have a new guy that kind of moves in. He feels a little bit like a strong man, and he now becomes the new hope of the people of Shechem. Verse 27, they went out into the field, gathered the grapes from their vineyards and trod them and held a festival. Now, that means that we're in the summertime, later summer. Probably we're talking about somewhere near the Feast of Tabernacles, because that follows shortly after the time of the vintage. And it says here that they went into the house of their God and ate and drank and reviled Abimelech. Now, the house of their God that they're making reference to here is the building that has grown up around where the standing stones of the covenant were erected by Joshua. But they are now referring to this place as the place of Baal, and Baal is the local Canaanite word for Lord. It probably started out being a reference to the true and living God who is the Lord of all. But it's the Lord of the Covenant house. And so now they've gone in there as the local shrine building. They're treating it almost like a temple. And they have their big festival. And while they're eating and drinking, they're talking down about Abimelech, who has become their tyrant over the last 3 years. Verse 28, and Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, who is Abimelech, and who are we of Shechem that we should serve him? Now, remember that the name Abimelech in Hebrew means, my dad is king, or was king. So that's a reference back to Gideon, the last hero judge. So Gaal asked the rhetorical question, who is this guy that thinks his dad was the king and that's why he should be in charge? Is he not the son of Yerubbaal? Now that's Gideon's other name. It means who will contend for Baal. And it was given to him by his dad at the very beginning of Gideon's story. Is he not the son of Jerubbaal? And is not Zebul his officer? Zabul, we're about to discover, is the official governor of Shechem on behalf of Abimelech. But the leadership doesn't apparently like him. Continuing with his quote, "Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem, but why should we serve him?" Now, Hamor here, that goes way back in history to the time when Jacob was camping in this area, because Hamor was kind of the king of Shechem, and Shechem was even the name of his son that Jacob's daughter Dinah got involved with, and that caused a big stink. So apparently there is this understanding of a hereditary line of the Canaanites through centuries down to the time of the judges that this Gaal is making reference to. If we're going to serve anybody, maybe we ought to serve a local guy, somebody that has a connection way back to the beginning of Shechem. And then he makes this comment, verse 29, "Would that this people were under my hand, then I would remove Abimelech. I would say to Abimelech, increase your army and come on out." So he is making a play to be in charge of the city of Shechem. Now I'm going to just kind of wonder out loud here to you for a moment. Is it possible that this Gaal fellow has some sort of genetic tie-in with the Canaanite line of Hamor? And that what he's actually saying here is, instead of some puppet of Abimelech being in charge of Shechem, you ought to have me be in charge of Shechem, because I would chase Abimelech off of this supposed throne that he's on. I challenge him publicly. So that's the setup. And Zabul heard about this. Verse 30, "When Zabul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed, his anger was kindled." Not surprising, because he's being attacked. "And he sent messengers to Abimelech secretly," or covertly, saying, "Behold, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his relatives have come to Shechem, and they're stirring the city against you. Now, therefore, go by night, you and the people who are with you, and set up an ambush in the field. Then in the morning, as soon as the sun is up, rise early and rush upon the city, and when he and the people who are with him come out against you, you may do to them as your hand finds to do." So this guy hurriedly sends a message to Abimelech, who's probably a few miles away, maybe up to 10 miles away, depending on where his headquarters is at, to tell him, you need to come overnight and set up an assault upon the traitors in your city of Shechem. And so, verse 34, "Abimelech and all the men who were with him rose up by night, and they set an ambush against Shechem in four companies," so four different groups. "And Gaal, the son of Ebed, went out and stood in the entrance of the gate of the city. And Abimelech and the people who were with him rose from the ambush." So some sort of signal being sent up. "When Gaal saw the people, he said to Zabul, 'Look, people are coming down from the mountaintops.'" So Shechem is an ancient city that's located between the shoulders of two mountains, Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. And when they came out, that is when Zabul comes out of the gate that faces evidently west toward those two hills, that's where the ambush is supposed to be coming from. So he must have set up some sort of signal. The gates of the city are open. Come on down, get this guy. And that's when they started to make the move down from one of these two mountains. Now, we're not going to hear Ebal or Gerizim mentioned, we're going to see a different name, which means Mount Shady. So it was probably a secondary nickname for the place. So as the guys are coming down from the mountain, in between the brush and the trees and things like that, Gaal sees that movement up there at a distance. And he says to Zebul, "Look, there's people coming down from up there." Zebul said to him, "You mistake the shadow of the mountains for men. So you're just imagining it." Gaal spoke again and said, "Look, people are coming down from the center of the land. One company is coming from the direction of the Diviner's Oak." Now, we don't know where all these locations are, but it would have been prominent places on the topography that everybody else would have known at this time when they were reading this. So he says, "No, I'm not imagining this. I'm not jumping at shadows. Those are people coming towards Shechem." Verse 38, "Then Zebul said to him, 'Well, where is your mouth now, you who said, who is Abimelech that we should serve him? Are not these the people whom you despised? Go out now and fight with them.'" So now that it is obvious that that Gaal knows that there is a military force coming upon the city of Shechem, Zebul mocks him with his own words. "Hey, you said you could take on Abimelech? Well, there he is. There's him and his men. Take him on." Verse 39, "Gaal went out at the head of the leaders of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. And Abimelech chased him, and he fled before him, and many fell wounded up to the entrance of the gate. And Abimelech lived, or possibly remained, at Arumah, and Zebul drove out Gaal and his relatives so that they could not dwell at Shechem." So effectively, in these few verses, we find out that Abimelech defeated Gaal, and Zebul was involved in chasing everyone associated with Gaal out of the city of Shechem, and effectively took the city back for Abimelech, with one exception. And that comes up in the following day's story, verse 42. "On the following day, the people went out into the field, and Abimelech was told. He took his people and divided them into three companies and set an ambush in the fields, and he looked and saw the people coming out of the city. So he arose against them and killed them. And Abimelech and the company that was with him rushed forward. They stood at the entrance of the gate of the city with the two companies rushed upon all who were in the field and killed them. And Abimelech fought against the city on that day. He captured the city, killed the people who were in it. He razed the city and sowed it with salt." Now, I kind of got a hold of my head of my story there, that effectively Abimelech takes the city with Zebul's assistance. And he punishes the city for letting their leaders be in rebellion against Abimelech. Because remember, Abimelech is a tyrant now, and tyrants won't put up with those that stand against them. So he not only burns down at least significant parts of the city, he also sows the land with salt that's nearby, which makes it impossible to grow their crops right up near the city. They'll have to go farther away, and it makes it more difficult for them to live a normal life. The idea in mind with this is, if people are busy just trying to survive, they're not going to cause trouble by raising armies and doing rebellious things. So that's all happened, but here's the exception that I was mentioning earlier. Verse 46, "When all the leaders of the Tower of Shechem heard of it, they entered the stronghold of the house of El-Berit." Now, El-Berit in Hebrew means God of the Covenant. So this is another name for that shrine building, sometimes referred to as Baal Berit, which means Lord of the Covenant. It's the shrine building that grew up around the standing stones put up by Joshua back at the beginning of Israel's history in the land. Those standing stones were supposed to include the writings of the covenant up to that point. It was either the entire book of Deuteronomy, I think, or possibly all the writings of Moses. It just makes a matter of how many stones were standing up. But over the time period since Joshua, this has taken on more of a superstitious feel to it and has become an idolatrous place. So it has a fortress attached to it, something called a stronghold here. It's also going to be called a tower next. So it's like a castle that's grown up around this shrine building, a fortification. So once the leaders of Shechem, who had supported Gaal, realized he was defeated, and Abimelech and Zebul had controlled the city and they burned key places of it, these guys retreat into the fortification of the shrine area, thinking that they can hold out against the work of Abimelech. So verse 47, Abimelech was told that all the leaders of the Tower of Shechem were gathered together. And Abimelech went up to Mount Zalmon, which means Mount Shady. And it's probably either Mount Ebal or Mount Gerizim that we've got in mind here, because those are the two prominent mountains right there on the east, northeast and southeast of Shechem. So he went up to Mount Shady, he and all the people that were with him, and Abimelech took an axe in his hand. He cut down a bundle of brushwood and took it and laid it on his shoulder. And he said to the men who were with him, "What you've seen me do, hurry and do as I have done." So he takes his people up there, chops himself a great big bunch of brush that he's going to use as kindling. And he tells everybody, do the same. Get yourself your own load of brushwood. So every one of the people cut down his bundle and, following Abimelech, put it against the stronghold. And they set the stronghold on fire over them. So we're talking about thousands of people that are gathering this brush. And they put this brush all around the fortification that's grown up around the shrine building that grew up around the standing stone area put there by Joshua. And they set this afire. Now, much of the fortification would have been stone and mortar. But some of the supporting material would have been flammable wood. And this fire is blazing so high and so hot that it ignites some of that interior woodwork. And once that interior woodwork is ignited, it spreads rapidly throughout the entire shrine building and fortification structure. And that's why it says here, so that all the people of the Tower of Shechem also died, about 1,000 men and women. So the rebels against Abimelech are now all dead, and they died by fire, sparked by brushwood, which a lot of it would have been thorns that grew wild up on the hillside near Shechem. Now, why is that important? Because 3 years earlier, the baby brother of Abimelech stood on the top of one of these mountains when they were having a coronation for Abimelech, declaring that he was the king of Shechem and all Israel. And he told a little fable about how the different plants were asking different types of plants to be their king, and none of the good plants wanted it, but the bramble was asked, and it took it. And so Jotham, that younger brother of Abimelech, said, "May fire come out from Abimelech and burn you guys up, and may fire from you come out and burn him up." So he put a curse on them that involved brambles and fire. And so here we're kind of seeing a literal fulfillment of that curse. Abimelech burned the people of Shechem who put him on the throne with fire from bramble bushes. Verse number 40. Then Abimelech went to Thebez. Now, Thebez is about 10 miles to the northeast of Shechem along the trade road that heads up toward the Sea of Galilee and beyond. So he went up to Thebez and encamped against Thebez and captured it. Evidently, Thebez was also in rebellion against him. Verse 51, but there was a strong tower within the city, and all the men and women and all the leaders of the city fled to it and shut themselves in, and they went up on to the roof of the tower. So they do the same thing. They retreat into the strong fortification that is at the center or perhaps at the high point of their city, and they think that they can be safe. Well, Abimelech came to the tower, and he fought against it, and he drew near to the door of the tower to burn it with fire. So he's piling wood, brambles perhaps, up against the door that leads into this tower area. And that's when this happens. Verse 53, a certain woman, don't know her name, apparently she was known after this, threw an upper millstone on Abimelech's head and crushed his skull. Now, an upper millstone here that's referenced is the millstone in a hand-grinding mill set. You basically have a base stone, and then you have this upper millstone that goes on a post, and there's a little peg that you can put into a hole, and then you rotate it over the top of the other one, and you can drop grain down in the center, and it grinds it. Well, an upper millstone is a pretty hefty thing, you know, several pounds worth of weight. What it was doing up here, probably it was some of the equipment in the fortress that allowed for the preparation of bread, because you ground your grain fresh. So she grabs a hold of this thing, leans over the edge of the top of the tower, and drops it on people that are down there getting ready to burn her and everybody else up. And it just so happens, and of course I'm saying that a little tongue-in-cheek, that it landed on Abimelech's head and caved in his skull. Now, it didn't kill him outright, but he senses that he has a mortal wound. Verse 54, then he called quickly to the young man, his armor-bearer, and said to him, "Draw your sword and kill me, lest they say of me, 'A woman killed him.'" So he's worried here at the point of his death about his legacy. And it was shaming for a combatant, a man who was a professional soldier, to be killed by a non-combatant, a non-professional. And so he doesn't want it to be said that he died by some woman cracking his head open with a millstone. He'd rather die by the sword of his own guy. And so the young man thrust him through, and he did die. And when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, everyone departed to his home. So the strong man is dead, and his army now dissolves and evaporates. And verse 56, the writings of the inspired prophet that's putting this detail in, thus God returned the evil of Abimelech, which he committed against his father in killing his 70 brothers, and God also made all the evil of the men of Shechem return on their heads, and upon them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Yerubbaal, or of Gideon. And that was the fable that I told you a little while ago that we'd already talked about, and how he dies at the hands of the people that originally supported him. And so that's the end of Abimelech. But it's not the end of the book of the Judges and all the tragedy that surrounds it. It would appear, and I'm going to give you this as my theory, that about this same time that he's dead, two other guys start popping up to be leaders in Israel. Chapter 10 says, after Abimelech, there arose to save Israel Tola, the son of Pua, son of Dodo, a man of Issachar, and he lived in Shamir in the hill country of Ephraim. So Ephraim was where all the stuff that we've been talking about was taking place with Abimelech. So Abimelech is out of the picture now, and a new guy stands up in his place, and apparently he is a better guy, much better. And so he leads or judges Israel for 23 years, and then he died and was buried in Shamir. So he's on the east side, excuse me, the west side of the Jordan. Meanwhile, verse number 3, after him arose Yair, the Gileadite, who judged Israel 22 years. So you'll notice there's 1 year's difference between them. The guy that's going to be in Gilead is 1 year short of the guy in Ephraim. And I think they ruled at the exact same time. So he had 30 sons who rode on 30 donkeys, and they had 30 cities called Havoth Yair to this day, which are in the land of Gilead. And then we'll talk about other things that happened during the time of the Judges when we get back together tomorrow.